The next segment that I'm very bullish on is DFIN, decentralized physical infra. I'm building that myself at Fleek, and I can already see that it's having its own impact, where people are now starting to accept Fleek as a solution and moving sort of away from Vercel because they were able to see the benefits of perpetual storage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 19th episode of Colors of Web3 and Entrepreneurship. My name is Lum, your typical Web3 host. Here I am today, back in the Web3 world, and I'm sitting here with Kanish Khurana, who is the head of developer relations at Fleek. Kanish, can you give us a quick introduction about yourself?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me here, Lum. I think it's a big pleasure and honor for me to be here with you, discuss about things that, you know, I've been working and building on. So, hey everyone, my name is Kanish. I'm the head of developer relations at Fleek. I love building softwares. I love building communities. And in general, it's my passion to help developers build softwares that can scale better and also build communities that can help more people beyond them. That's sort of what I do. That's sort of what I focus on. At Fleek, I'm trying to build a developer community based around almost every developer category you can think of, which means people who are very new to development, we are there for them. People who are sort of intermediate, they've been working professionally for some time, we are here for them. And finally, you know, people who then want to become startup founders, we are there for them as well. So that's sort of what my focus is and what I'm working on. And that's a quick intro about me and what I do.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, I'm sure we will talk more about that later. But before we go into that, actually, I'd like to know a bit about your background. Please feel free to share with us whatever timeline you feel is appropriate, maybe from university, since your first job or whenever. You know, tell us about your professional background, your upbringing also.
Absolutely. So I think my passion for coding in general started in school itself. This is like sixth grade when I learned something called QBasic. And I was always a computer geek. I would, you know, love messing around with computers. My parents reminded me that when I was a kid, I wanted to make games. That is a dream long gone, very far away from me. I make websites now. That's a much more easier thing to do than make games. But yeah, more or less, it started in sixth grade, learned something called QBasic. By the time I came to class 11th, I was able to make full stack applications using Java. So I used to use Android Studio back then to actually make the entire application, make a layer of backend on it using Spring Boot and all. And then, yeah, university started, learned Python, web development, et cetera, et cetera. And towards my end of university, I sort of got into blockchain. A friend of mine took me to an event and he's like, hey, listen, there's this very cool thing called blockchain. You will not need a bank if you have a good blockchain associated with you. I was like, wait, that is very interesting. So yeah, then we just moved forward and I became like hardcore Solidity enthusiast, started building things here and there with Solidity. And here we are today. So that's a quick intro to where I started and now where I am.
I know. I don't think many of us realize that, but yeah,
exactly.
So how did you first learn about the crypto Web3 space in general? Like what was it? Who taught you? Who brought you into it? Or maybe like how did you come across it, right? First, yeah.
Absolutely. I think this was when pandemic in India had just started. And my dad was actually big on NFTs. So he was like, hey, listen, somebody sold a monkey for 2 million. And I'm like, what monkey for 2 million? Must be a golden monkey. He's like, no, it's a photo. Look, it's a funny monkey. I'm like, wait, what? So that's when I started exploring. So I made my first MetaMask account. It has been hacked. That MetaMask is long gone. Made my first account on OpenSea, saw what Polygon is for the first time, saw there's somebody named Vitalik. So I had some idea about Bitcoin. Now, Bitcoin is something I was very, very familiar with. I also attempted running a node and all, but I never had any idea that it can ever go beyond Bitcoin, which is what Ethereum did, you know, general purpose blockchain application for everybody. You know, so my parents are doctors. We were still helping. I was helping my parents out during the pandemic. And suddenly I came back to my system one day. I just sit and I'm like, wait, what? Monkeys are being sold? What is Polygon? What is Ethereum? Now I have to study everything. And then a friend of mine actually introduced me to a couple people hosting events around in India, online events, offline events, both of that. During pandemic online, after pandemic offline.
This is in 2020, right?
Yeah. So 2020, then 2022. So online events had started way back in 2019, 2020. But offline events, I actually started going in 2022. So that was almost 2 years ago. And this was not just Web3 events. This was also events by companies like MongoDB, you know, a big database provider across the world. So I learned a lot on how communities are built, but I also learned a lot on how Web3 is built. And I realized that after every event, I would come home and just make notes and start studying online. We didn't have ChatGPT in 2020, so it was a lot of research. But now it's very easy to do all of it. That's a little bit of something.
I see. So I guess, was it would it be fair to say that your dad was actually the one introduced you to Web3 in a way? With the monkey? I mean, I'm assuming he's probably referred to the Bored Ape, right? Bored Ape Yacht Club, right? Yeah, the famous collection.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. I see. That.
Awesome. And then can you tell us what do you do for fun outside of work? What are your hobbies?
Absolutely. I love driving. I would, you know, put on some good music. My dad has a very good car, and I usually drive that whenever I have time. Apart from that, I love working out a little bit here and there whenever I find time, and that's majorly all I do for fun. That's it.
Nice. Driving. So have you drove? I mean, India is quite a big country, actually. When I, in my two times that I've been there, I've just realized that, I mean, India is actually very big country, right? I mean, it seems small because it's crowded, but have you done any cross-country driving in India?
So I've driven a lot around north of India. I've gone from Delhi to Punjab, gone from Delhi to UP, and that's like a drive of 200 kilometers. When you go to Punjab, it's like 600 kilometers. Not 600, but yeah, around 450 kilometers at least. If you go to the farther end of Punjab, that is 600 for sure. So I've done all of that. And it's my favorite thing to just put on music and drive at a comfortable speed and just enjoy the drive while you go. And yeah, that's something I enjoy a lot, I realized.
Nice. That's awesome. What type of music do you listen to then when you're driving?
I'm a big Post Malone fan. Hip hop all the way. I want to listen to good, like, upbeat music. But I used to play guitar when I was a kid. So from time to time, I go back to rock music as well. And that's majorly the kind of music I switch between. So it's hip hop and rock.
Nice. Awesome. Awesome. Wow. You have very diverse interests in for your thinking. Impressive. So do you still play guitar this day or no?
No. It's been 3 years. That guitar is just kept in the corner of my room. I'm very ashamed when I look at it. And I hope I go back there someday. But yeah, now it's just not the time. I have too much to build.
Yeah. No, I bet. It's global. You were running like a hacker house, right? If I remember correctly, right? At that time, yeah. Yeah, so you actually haven't even started building your project yet. And this is like already at, I think it was like, so the hackathon began on like Friday evening. And this is when I think I ran into you at like Saturday, 11 p.m. at night, right? And then the project was due at like 9 a.m. on Sunday morning. You haven't even done anything yet. You just came in, you ate some food, and I was just talking, asking questions. And I know you haven't even wrote a code, but you actually even spent like 45 minutes, or I think even an hour, like just talking to me and trying to help my team with our problem at that time. So I really appreciate that. And basically, that's how I met Kanisha.
Yeah, that was a very fun day. Because I remember we were just talking about LangChain, how to implement, you know, calls to LangChain, get answers from AI. And I was just like, hey, wait, I made this before. And I showed you the, you know, a project that I had worked on a couple months ago. So yeah, fun times, dude. I think that was a very, very good hackathon in general.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, and I was really impressed also with the mobile app project that you had built before for one of your clients. Yeah, that was really impressive. Like, you did everything by yourself, front end, back end, and even the AI also.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, without further ado, let's go ahead and deep dive into your current company, Flik. Yeah, feel free to share any
absolutely
website or anything that you have already prepared.
Absolutely. To get started, I would like to give an intro. Then I have a cool little demo for what deployments on Flik can look like. And then, you know, talking about the roadmap, what we have in the future, etc. So Flik is a decentralized deployment platform. And that is what we've started as for the longest time now. We help you put your files on IPFS. We help you put your websites on the blockchain. We can help you put your data anywhere on any of these infra providers. And one of the coolest things that we do is now that we have started working on, and the testnet of this is also going to be out within a week, it's called the Flik Network. So it's not just a deployment platform now. It's more over a decentralized infrastructure that helps you put your, you know, data on chain and make it available to you through something called edge networks. So edge is a concept that has existed in cloud computing for a very long time. You know, edge computing is when you don't do computation on nodes, rather you serve data through edge decentralized pipelines. So you don't really have to wait for your server sitting in US Central 1 on Amazon to deliver your data to you. You can actually do it through the edge that's serving two nodes. And that's sort of what we've been building at Fleek. And the idea here is that when I say it is edge computation, one cool feature we have is geolocation. So the edge that is closest to your geolocation is going to be serving you data instead of a server sitting miles away in the US while you are sitting in India. At least that's the case for me. So that's what we've been working on. We've had two very successful testnet phases of the Fleek network, and we are releasing the Fleek network testnet phase 3 in a week. So we will have more performance information. We will be very, very close to releasing the mainnet as well. And that is something I'm personally very excited about, because I've generally felt that data knowledge and access should be as decentralized and as close to you as possible. And with the kind of tech that we've got brewing in-house, I think websites can load a lot faster, servers can compute data a lot faster, and you can just provide information in a way that centralized servers just can't provide. And with every contributor into the community, that just becomes another node. So that brings more power to the Fleek network, more computation to the Fleek network, and it's better for everybody using the Fleek platform. So that's what Fleek is, and that's what we've been working
on. Nice. So is it safe to say that Fleek has expanded a lot of services? And I heard about Fleek is for the IPFS, right? Hosting was that the first use case, right? But now it has already expanded, like you said, Nick. With so exactly. Much more, right?
So one of the most initial things we did was, of course, IPFS hosting, right? Bringing data on IPFS, providing a way to compute that data, put it through a gateway that you can access on a browser. But definitely now we've gone sort of beyond that. We were able to notice shortcomings of all the networks that we were sort of relying on. And therefore, we felt that, hey, I think edge computation is something that is also geolocation based, is much, much better than relying on a node that is miles, miles far away from you, even in a decentralized infrastructure. So I am, using IPFS, but my IPFS node that I'm talking to is sitting somewhere in UK, which is so, so far away. And to solve that problem, basically, we started building this layer out. We want it to be very modular. We've got a couple cool integrations happening with ZK. And that's what I can share so far about who we were, just a decentralized deployment platform to a decentralized infrastructure that we are now becoming, and people can sort of build on top of us. Don't get me wrong, the website deployment is still one of the first use cases of Fleek Network, but we are excited to see what people come up with, and my job is to support people building more and more on the Fleek Network. So yeah, that's a cool or like a elaborate introduction to everything.
Yeah. Oh, it's cool. So then for the edge network, who will run these network? I guess that would be one of my first questions. Is this all be run by
people? It's people? A community run infrastructure.
So it's fully decentralized.
Exactly. You have a good enough machine that will be able to run the network without any problems.
Okay. Is it? There was another company I remember. They brand themselves as one that you can run with very simple, very low, even with very cheap software, right? Maybe you can run, or maybe not even a Raspberry Pi, but maybe something.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of that company, but like, is your company with Edge, like what type of hardware is required? Do we need a fancy gaming laptop, gaming PC?
Not really. From the first two phases of the testnet, we were able to realize that while you can't run it on like a 4GB RAM laptop, but you can't basically run anything on a 4GB RAM laptop. But yeah, you need somewhere around 16 to 32 GBs of RAM to be able to run it successfully. We are doing some tests internally to see what kind of other chipsets can we work with, what kind of other configurations like SGX can we fit into the architecture and make it work. But that's still in experimental stages. I would say that if you have a good enough, for example, if you have a MacBook, you should have minimal problems running it. And if you do have any problems, I'm there to help you. We'll probably run it together. And I'll be working on a lot of guides for different kind of configurations that you can set in to make the network work.
Interesting. So then is the idea is kind of similar to you guys want to become like the AWS in a way for Web3?
Exactly.
Fair to say? Okay.
Exactly, yeah. So it needs to become very, you've actually placed it very nicely, because AWS is centralized infrastructure layer for everything. Hmm. We want to become the decentralized infrastructure layer for everything. Shortcomings, you know, there are shortcomings to a centralized architecture with control, authority, etc. With us, all of that just goes away out of the picture. And majorly, that's sort of what we want to become. We've already targeted the front-end layer of that. You know, AWS has Amplify. We have Fleek platform. So just come to fleek.xyz, host whatever website you want to host, and move forward. I can present that in a bit as well, because the platform's working phenomenally. And the network needs another week for people to actually see and run their testnets and everything that they've got brewing. So that's the case there.
Oh, that's great. Can you share with us maybe a simple demo of the Fleek site and, you know, what people can do over there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd be more than happy to do that. Let me quickly present my screen. So here is the Fleek website. I hope it's visible.
Yes, it's visible. Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, very beautiful website.
I mean, I love it personally as well. And, you know, Fleek helps you build lightning fast Web3 apps. And it's got like a bunch of things in store where you can, you know, compute and all. You can have your own domains integrated. You can have the entire IPFS storage module inside this particular platform only. And that's one thing that I want to, you know, walk everybody through. So right now, the platform is in the alpha stage, but we are more than happy to grant access to any developer who wants to come on board, or any founder who wants to just try out the website, or just any enthusiast who found Fleek interesting and they want to, you know, get on Fleek. So with that said, we've got some really interesting features. The first one is, I'd like to start from the bottom right here, which is storing your files. Because I feel that adding your files to IPFS, Arweave, and Filecoin is what we can provide right now. And you need to understand that this particular storage is perpetual storage, which means that unlike G Drive or Amazon S3, when you delete a file, it's just gone. Things cannot be deleted from the blockchain. And that is what the benefit we are sort of leveraging here. So I can go to store your files, and then I can go to upload. And, you know, during upload, I can just upload whatever I like. So I upload a random GIF that I have of the, you know, thunder that we sort of carry. And now when I click on this particular thunder, this is what we have. So this particular image, or rather this particular GIF, lives on IPFS. It is perpetually stored. And if you see, here is the link for it. This is the IPFS hash that we've sort of gone through the gateway. And now you can access it through this link. And this is true for all the files that you upload here, not just this one. So I can dive into a little bit of fundamentals. So when a file goes to IPFS, for a normal browser to see it, you need something called a gateway. And that is what we sort of help people with, to give them a gateway, connect them to the blockchain for their files. And yeah, that's majorly how we store and help people deploy files. Now, on to some more interesting stuff, which is sites. So you can definitely add your own site. I haven't added one yet. And if you are sort of trying Fleek out and you want to see how templates work, or how, you know, templates on Astro, which is another framework, or Hugo work, you can try them out. We have friends at Lens Protocol who sort of contributed a starter kit for us. And we can deploy almost any one of them. We've got a bunch of templates in store. And using them, you can quickly go through the cycle of deploying applications and working through it. I think one of the simplest things that a developer wants in 2024 is Next.js. It's a full stack framework. You can make your backend and frontend in the same thing. And it's especially the most beneficial during hackathons, because you have a distributed team. Your backend and front-end developers need to run their servers, and then they can connect the application. That is just so much overhead. So just deploying Next.js is the easiest way to move forward. And we've got a template ready for anybody who wants to deploy. And we've got documentation for it, everything that you will need to make Next.js work with Fleek. And it will help you build a static site. And with the Fleek network coming on board very, very soon, you will be able to build a full stack site using Fleek as well. If I just click on deploy template, the platform moves forward. I can sort of, you know, connect my GitHub to the platform. And now it will sort of redirect me, install my app on my own GitHub. Let's quickly go through that flow. So I'll configure this. I'll give it, you know, whatever repositories I wanted to have access to. Let me see. I had uploaded quick repository right before this one. Actually, let's just do all repositories for now, and we can just move forward. So the benefit with all repositories is that you don't have to individually select, right? And that's a quick way to move forward. Now I come back here. My account has been selected. Repository name is Next.js template. It will be a private Git repository for now. And you just click on create and deploy. That is it. You get the code, you get the website, you can do whatever you like to it. And that's it. We solve all the problems that developers have in setting up their website for deployments. And I personally felt that this is such a good way to start a project because I get Next.js and it is already deployed. So now when I'm working and if anything crashes on the deploy template, I can just roll back. And that makes my flow very, very easy. I know, right?
Yeah,
so we also get a cute little deployed link with onfleek.app domain. You can obviously go and edit the domain if you like. And all the details about this particular application will be provided.
So one question I have about this is, is the website actually being hosted on IPFS?
So the way it works is that the website's files, they live on IPFS. But now IPFS itself cannot compute data. It can just store data. And that is where sort of Fleek servers come into the picture. So with the help of whatever compute functionalities the network will build, whatever servers we have deployed right now, and whatever infra we have in store for you, we pick those files from IPFS, we build them, and then they go, and you can use them or see them through the browser that you're using. And that is the kind of infra that we're trying to build. Now, right now, these are just static, which means you cannot do server-side rendering, you cannot do anything like that. But in a week from now, you will be able to do that as well. And we have a really, really interesting Fleek network serverless proof of concept that we'll be releasing. So if you're watching this podcast now, you should be able to see that in a week. And if you're watching it anywhere in February, that POC is already out and you will be able to access it.
That's awesome. Wow. Awesome. And it looks like it's building. So, is it? Yeah. Oh, okay. It probably take a couple of minutes, right? Yeah.
Correct.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Next.js, it downloads all the dependencies, it goes through everything, and you're done. So, build breakdown's also going on right here. You can see all the logs, no details yet there. And finally, any domains that you want to connect, you can do that as well. So, right now, it's just going through its own process, You can also, by the way, track your deploys that you've done. If any audits have been conducted, you can check them here. Analytics will also soon be available. And in settings, you can change the, you know, the domain on Fleek domain that you have, or you can connect, you know, your own domains as well, which is a functionality right here on custom domains. And we also provide ENS domains. So my domain is kanishkrana.eth. You can just go kanishkrana.eth on like Google, enter, and then you can see my website. So, you know, that's another feature we provide.
And that's really cool. By the way, will the ENS domain be able to resolve on a regular browser like Google Chrome or Firefox? People can see.
You would need a blockchain, blockchain-powered browser for that. But again, we are planning to solve that very, very soon. So you should be able to see some functionality built out around that in a couple of weeks, if not months. So yeah, there you go. The Fleek Network Next.js template is ready.
Oh, nice.
It is deployed. And yeah, you can go through the Fleek documentation, which is, again, something I absolutely love. Because we have an SDK that you can use. So you don't even have to come to the platform to put your files on IPFS. Or if you are like me and you don't want to just turn on Google Chrome as well to do any of that, we have a CLI as well. So you can deploy applications, you can put files on IPFS, you can do all the compute functionalities through your like terminal of your computer. That's it. And you know, that's basically the entire functionality suite that we have at Fleek. And we are obviously building more and more features as and when developers come back to us. We always work with them and try to find the easiest and the fastest resolution to their problems. And for that, we have our own Discord server. So you can join the Discord server, share any details, come here, say hi, and you know, just work with us throughout building this and building this as a very scalable, decentralized layer. And yeah, that's majorly all I had to present.
Awesome. Well, thank you. That's very interesting demo that you show us over there. Yeah, so it's very easy. It's kind of remind me a lot of the Vercel, maybe some other deployment in Web2, right? But except here, I guess you pinning the file. I guess the main difference, and please correct me if I'm wrong here. So in regular like I guess Vercel, they just put it on, I don't know, some centralized servers, right?
Yeah.
I'm assuming. And then, but in your case, in Flink, the files are actually stored in IPFS. And then, but then, so you still have a like a Web2 domain address, so people can actually still go there and visit it on regular browser.
Exactly. So just to add on there, I think you've explained it very nicely that while Vercel is built on top of AWS, we want people to be able to build more Vercels on top of Flink network, right? So the larger vision is to obviously have IPFS there. We respect and love what IPFS has given to the world. But with Flink network, with having decentralized edge compute, and you know whatever geolocation functionalities we discussed a couple seconds ago, all of that just makes the website or the app experience so much better. Because now you don't have to wait for servers to respond. You have your, like, you can run your own node on your laptop, and that can simply be your own, you know, server or your own, you know, like what Amazon has, EC2 VMs is what they provide. Yeah. So, you know, you can do all of that by contributing to the network. You will obviously be rewarded in tokens. There is going to be an entire incentivization there built on top of it. So every contributor, be it somebody who deploys a website, somebody who builds with us, or somebody who just runs the Flink node, all of them are very dear and close to our heart. And we will incentivize all of them as best as we can.
Nice. So how many people are actually running the Flink nodes right now?
Absolutely. So we've had a lot of interest around the first and second testnet phases. And now we will be releasing the phase three of the testnet. So phase three is when we sort of test things out on our end. So when we run, the Flink Foundation runs the nodes themselves just to ensure everything works. And phase 3B is when community starts running their nodes. And that is when you will actually start seeing the power of edge compute come to life, because we want people from distant parts of the world to come together and run these nodes together. So 3B, I'm very excited about the phase 3B. And that is when people will be able to run nodes together.
Exciting. Yeah. So I guess people, I'm still a bit curious. So do people run this on their spare laptop, or do they have like dedicated server? Do they buy online server and then the users run the node, or what? How do you envision them using it?
We've had a variety of interest around this, and people have asked the same question to me a bunch of times. Like, how should I provision my machine to work with Flink? And the answer to that is actually what we are working towards, because obviously we want as much resources as we can. But if we tell you to buy a separate laptop just to run our node, that is not the best experience now, is it? So with phase 3A, we'll have more detailed answers towards that. And with 3B, we will actually do practical implementations to see, can you run a node while having your normal laptop work beside it? So that is something that I'm working towards. Now, my machine has good RAM. It can run the node and it can also do computation and run VS Code and stuff like that beside it. But not everybody has like an 18 GB RAM machine or a 32 GB RAM machine, right? So we are now, we started at a point and now we are going smaller and smaller in RAM capacity, just to see where the breaking point is, and then how do we go beyond.
I see. Yeah. So how many phases are there? You said right now you're on phase three. How many phases are there?
Absolutely. So there are actually five phases, and we have a, like a detailed roadmap on the Flink network website as well. So if anybody's interested, the Flink.network website, they just go to that and they will be able to see the entire detailed roadmap, the ways we want to help community and make the node runners benefit the most from this. And by summer this year, the mainnet will be out. So majority of the hard work has been done. Now it's more about analyzing data, making tweaks, and get ready for mainnet launch in summer. So yeah, that's the plan.
Nice, that's very exciting. So actually now I'm quite curious about the people behind Flink, right? Can you, how many people are in your company? Flink.
So we've got a very nice team so far. We've got about 30 people, maybe 25 to 30 people. It has been always, so we are expanding now. So, you know, if anybody is looking for a role, we may have an opening for you. We've largely been a very engineering dependent and a tech dependent team, because I believe that is how most Web3 protocols should be. Invest very heavily on engineers and developers to build what you want and then start scaling it up. So, you know, we've got a couple of good engineers. We've got very good content marketing people. We've got, you know, people leading the growth from like the front and actually building strategies to bring this forward. Because you may have realized by now that we are still in very nascent stages of putting Flink out to the world. The platform is in alpha. The network's testnet is being put out. So we have a lot of scope for development and growth still. We are very far from the finish line right now. And we want to be able to, you know, have a very nice balanced team that has tech and non-tech departments working together. So, you know, that's sort of where I fit in because I do tech and non-tech both. I become a bridge. I become the feedback loop for the product team. I become like a marketing or like a distribution channel for the marketing team and stuff like that. And that's basically all my focus has been so far. So we are not like a 200 member team. Not sure when we become that. But so far, we've got people who genuinely love what they are building and working towards. And I think that's what matters the most. So yeah, that's my answer to that question.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. Can you tell people who may not be so familiar with the developer relation, like what you do on a maybe daily basis, you know, and also what percentage of your time is spent doing what, you know, if you have some of that data?
Absolutely. So yeah, I've been a developer relations engineer for about 3 years now. Most of my career has been around communities. So I started off as a full stack developer, but I was always in touch with some club, some technical society, something somewhere, working on the back end for them, making a website or making an app, or being on the front end speaking and doing events, stuff like that. So developer relations engineering is a part of, well, a company in which you have somebody who can code as well, who can do workshops, technical talks, who can talk to the community, who can solve any questions that developers are having, and essentially work to uplift the developer community, building on top of that protocol or that company. For example, in my case, it is my job to make sure that developers are building websites in general. And if they can understand how Next.js works, React.js works, I've not even gotten to Flink yet, you see? So I work on a very fundamental level as well with developers, where in you want to learn anything, cool. If I know it, I'll teach you. If I don't know it, I will learn to a point and then teach you. That is sort of what my focus is. And then if they're interested in bring sort of collaboration, I bring them to Flink. And we deploy and we build startups and we support them. And that's a different realm. So yeah, developer relations basically focuses on coding, building relations with the community, doing events, and writing a lot of code. So I usually when I wake up, I have a couple hours free to myself because I never schedule meetings when I wake up. I wake up, I revise any coding concepts. So for example, I've been working a lot on Rust lately. I think Rust is going to be the peak or the most famous language in Web3 in 2024. So I want to gear up. I wake up, I do a little bit of Rust, and then I finish up any pieces of website or apps that I'm working on. Then I start my community-facing work where we do events, where we do community meetings, or even ambassador calls. So stuff like that. So it's more of a 50-50 split, but it will vary. For example, ETH India, right? It was hectic. And it was 60% communities and then 40% coding whenever you find time. ETH Tokyo, where we met, it was 80% communities because I was doing my own hacker house. And, you know, like 20% coding, which is why coding started in the last 10 hours for me. So. Yeah. That's sort of the split variable, but yeah, it's definitely fun because you get to explore a lot of things.
Nice. So that's fascinating. So I guess you also make videos and write a lot. And actually, I think you raised an important point about Rust. Actually, I also want to ask about how do you learn new things on yourself? Like, what are your go-to resources? Like, how do you learn new things? Because I know, like, in the developer world, you always have to constantly learn new things here.
Exactly. I think this is a very less spoken topic in the developer community, is that how do you quickly grasp concepts and move forward? So for me, it is always, okay, what do I want to build? So say I'm like a Web2 full stack developer. I know Merge Stack. I know basics of Java and stuff like that. And I want to work in Solidity. So my first question is, okay, what do I build? The answer is very straightforward. A smart contract, basically a piece of code that can do something with data on the blockchain. Okay, cool. How do I get started? For me, it is always easier to find a good video on YouTube that has a lot of views, a lot of general things covered in that video. I build my basics. I spend some time around that video. And from there, then I go to the documentation. So I first watch a video on Solidity, what is Solidity, etc. Then I go to the documentation just to see what have I missed out on. What is new in Solidity and how do I get started? In Web3, we have some companies that have very good documentation. For example, Third Web, right? They have documentation on almost everything in the world. And on the other hand, we also have some companies who are not so good, right? They haven't really set up that documentation layer yet. So it is very difficult to learn and build them. And so yeah, my approach is very simple. Start off with something basic, build it end to end, refer to the documentation wherever you need to, and ship it as soon as possible and get feedback. One thing I love about Twitter is that put something out very quickly and people will share whether you made some mistakes, whether you did something right or wrong. And I'm very open, like roast my front end, just go tell me the worst thing that I've written, tweet about it. It'll anyway get me traction, but I will learn something and that is more important. So that's sort of my process of learning something new.
Nice. I like that process. Yeah, thank you for sharing. And I think that by sharing your work on Twitter, right? I mean, it's also like one, I feel like it gives you more accountability, right? And then, but also second, like you said, you also get the feedback from people and then you can learn from people. And actually, I think the Web3 community, I would say that majority of people exist on like Twitter and Discord, right? As a, including the developer also. So
exactly.
Yeah, I've also followed like many developers also account on there. Just to see, you know, maybe see their journey, right? Maybe they also learn something new from them. They post, so interesting. That's interesting. Going back to Russell, but I'm like now I'm curious. Maybe this is maybe a technical question, but I'm sure you probably have the answer. Like, why do you think Rust would be the core language for Web3, the important language? Yeah,
I have some intuition around it. That so you know, Rust is blazing fast. It has some inbuilt features that JavaScript, or rather any dynamically typed language, does not have. So I feel that with the speed that it provides, it becomes a very good resource to build your blockchains on. And when I came to Fleek, a very good thing was that I was very heavily interested in Rust, and their entire network stack is built in Rust. And I was like, wow, I get to learn so much from people who are actually building the exact same thing that I want to build when I learn Rust. So it became very complimentary for me to actually then get motivated and learn Rust. Secondly, you can build smart contracts in Rust deployed on Solana. You can build infra layer protocols in Rust deployed on wherever, whichever chain you like, because almost all of them today support Rust. Even if you don't want to be in blockchains, even if you don't want to be in Web3, you can make Web2 servers using Rust, and they have amazing response time compared to what your node servers can do, or your, you know, Express servers can do. I'll share an example. Previously, I used to work as a software engineer, and I made a full stack app for a company. So just one weekend I was sitting, I didn't have much. So I was like, okay, let me make the same thing that I made in Express, but this time I will use Rust for it and not JavaScript. My response time for a basic CRUD-based API, create, read, update, delete API, was 300 milliseconds using JavaScript, but with Rust, it was 3 milliseconds. So
wow,
you can see,
for 100x. Me, it was
exactly. I was blown away. I went back to the founder. I talked to them. Hey, can we switch the entire backend? They were like, interesting. We don't have time for that. But it was absolutely phenomenal for me to see the impact that Rust has. And that was more than enough motivation for me to at least get started. I'm sure I will never finish my journey in Rust. It's a forever, you know, continuous loop of learning.
Yeah.
But at least I'll get started and build something interesting. That is sort of my idea.
I see. Yeah, I'm sure it's similar to any other language, right? You already have like maybe continuously updating with newer version, right? Fixing bugs and always releasing maybe new features,
exactly.
Right? Yeah, so you just have to keep continuous learning. You mentioned you want to build something. What type of things do you want to build? Share with us.
First, I want to build like basic implementations of various consensus mechanisms. I believe that for every blockchain, the base is always a consensus, right? How do nodes talk to each other? And how do they come to a shared state of data together? Consensus mechanisms rule that entirely. So we read a lot about, hey, proof of work, proof of stake, you know, delegated proof of stake, whatever. With like upcoming chains, even at Fleek Network, we've got Narwhal and Bullshark working as the consensus layer. We don't have proof of work or proof of stake. I would love to explore these consensus mechanisms and building my own code to do that, not read somebody and then see, oh, wow, now I understand. I want to build it myself. I feel that as an engineer, I will learn a lot through that process. And you can do that in any language. Rust is not like a... Rust is just my liking, so I will do it in Rust. But if you're somebody watching this podcast and you want to build it in JavaScript, go ahead. It's just my preference and I want to do Rust. And of course, you know, Rust developers in the world are like these many, only these many.
Yeah, so when it's in quite the future, small at the moment, yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, supply demand. I would always be in demand if I have Rust in my skill set. I can always build scalable applications. And, you know, I become the part of this small subset of developers interested in Rust. That's sort of my idea. But yeah, I mean, my ideology will change, I know. Something new will happen, maybe a new language, I might pivot. But Rust for now, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. It seems to me that so many different blockchain, even layer one blockchain, use Rust as one of their main programming language. So I think it kind of makes sense. Yeah. I'm actually curious. I mean, and feel free to answer to the extent of your knowledge. What would be involved in building a consensus mechanism? Like, what do you have to write contract? Do you have to...
So it deals a lot around not decentralized, but distributed computing at that point. So with Rust, what you would have to build is a pooling structure in which whatever. So, for example, you have connection to a blockchain node. I have a connection to a blockchain node. We both are separate. We are connected to different nodes. But you are putting some data on your node. I'm putting some data to my node. But who will make sure that the data that we have pushed is sequentially arranged? Obviously, timestamp is allocated there. But what if we push the same data at the exact same timestamp to the millisecond? What happens then? So there needs to be a pooling mechanism in which you can put in all the data and then arrange it properly. There needs to be a distribution mechanism that can take all that arranged data and put it across all the nodes. And then there needs to be an acceptance mechanism so that all the nodes can see that data and accept it as their own state. So I would say that these three are like some preliminary things that I have learned while I was exploring consensus layer building. Again, very high level view, but with every consensus, the method changes. Some might not even need pooling. Some might not even need acceptance. So that is what I'm interested in, you know, like who needs what? How do I build something out there? And, you know, just make scalable structures. I'm very passionate about websites that can serve 100,000 users or probably more. And that sort of is my mindset. So yeah, I think that would be a good answer.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. Also, looking forward to the day when, you know, blockchain can have the scalability, right? I think that's all one of the trilemma that a lot of people talk about
in
blockchain, that a lot of blockchains still face that problem, especially like Ethereum and Bitcoin, because these are like the OG in blockchain. And I think security-wise, it's great, right? Decentralization is great, but scalability is not really there. And that's why we see a lot of L2, ZK rollup solution.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think scalability is definitely a very big concern for the entire industry. And I'm pretty sure after scalability, it's going to be security. Because, hey, we can serve 100,000 users, but how do we make it the most secure batch of 100,000 users? So, yeah, I mean, trilemma, as you said, we will go in circles.
So, at the beginning, you mentioned you want to build a developer community, right, in the future. Do you have some sort of an idea how you would go about doing that? Because I think in Web3, one of the very interesting skill set that a lot of Web3 companies now require, it's called community building. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to thumbs up. Anyway, community building is actually super important in Web3. So I'm curious about what's your take on that? Yeah, how to build a developer community.
So I feel that, so I've done this a couple of times before, in which I've gone from 0 to 100 in building a community from scratch and just getting the name of the company out as somebody or as some company that supports developers and does it as their core value. So the first thing here is to actually have a roadmap. You know, how do you want? So for example, I come to the Fleet community today. How should my journey look like? Is what I need to define as a developer relations engineer, as a community leader. I should know that, okay, so today LAM is a part of the Fleet community. Great. Is LAM a developer? Yes. Okay. What kind of technologies can he work with? Great. What kind of Fleet technologies can he work with? Great. And what kind of incentives can I provide you at every level to make sure that you like what you are doing? Because at the end of the day, just saying good job might not be the best thing. There needs to be some incentivization to keep you coming back. It could be providing more educational material. It could be actual monetary incentivization. It could be swags. There are 100 ways to do this. But it is always a roadmap that we need to define. So that is the first thing for me. So whenever I start building a community from scratch, it is the roadmap. Then I find friends who are, you know, working towards the same goal as I am. So if today I want to build a community of web developers, I would find friends who are good web developers and try to see what kind of value my community or I can provide to them. So value provision, incentivization, and having a clear roadmap are the three pillars on which your community will stand. And once you have these three things sorted, how do you provide value? How do you provide incentives? And what is the roadmap? You're good to go. Your community will, you know, then it's a cycle. New people will come in, older people will help them. New people will come in, older people will help them. It'll just go in a circle. That's sort of how I envision it.
Nice. Fascinating. That's how I heard of that. Yeah. So
I would love to ask you though, what has been your experience with the communities you've been a part of? And what are some goods or bads you can share?
That's an excellent question. So for my community. Okay, let me share one of my experience when I was a learning about data science. Yeah. So actually, when I was learning data science, right, because I was basically switching myself from a pure business person background to a developer or like technical background, right? I went online, I found some courses, and then I found MITx, right? They're offering a curriculum. I think it's called like a micro master in data science. And I enrolled in the program. I thought it was, I mean, everything was online, obviously, because I was living in Japan and the program was in US, the US time zone. And I thought it was just going to be like watching videos and doing lesson. I mean, of course, I was watching video, doing lesson, right? But there's also a part of these where you get to interact with your classmates. And I think that was a part that was very interesting and exciting for me, because actually, thanks for that, I was able to progress faster. I was able to ask questions from the mentors, right? I was able to receive help. I also gave back by providing my knowledge, right? Actually, so I think I took 4 or 5 courses at that time. And the first 2 courses, I think I was taking through it. And then I think the third course, the third course I was taking, I actually became, I think they call it like a community mentor or community tutor, something like that. Wow. So basically I was giving back the value. Actually, so I was taking the course at the same time, but then at the same time as other students, right? But I was also responsible for, basically this is like a voluntary effort, but I was just decided to like, okay, well, I want to try it. So, and it made me more, I have to hold myself accountable, because whenever the material is released out, right, on the week, I forgot whether it was Monday or like whatever day it was, but the first day material come out, I have to learn it ahead of time. I have to do the exercise, right, so that I would know the material, so that I can actually teach and then answer the question from the people. But of course, you don't want to give away the answer, right? You want to just give some hints. You want to provide some sort of a help or assistance to people, just enough so that they would be motivated enough to like maybe point them in the right resources, right direction, so then they can find the answer for themselves instead of that. And then that was a very fun experience for me. And I think the fun part for me is just even just getting the recognition, right? Getting the thanks and the recognition from classmates, right? I mean, most of them, I've never even seen their faces, but we had like a Discord also. I think someone also set up a Discord. And to be honest, that was actually my first introduction to Discord. I had never even used Discord before in my life. And then so I joined the Discord and just, you know, asking questions, talking to people. By the way, Discord was not really affiliated with the MITx, but that was just like how, you know, like community was formed, right? So some people just took that initiative and built the Discord and formed the community. Yeah, MITx, they had like a forum. Yeah, so forum. It's like very Web2, typical like Blackboard type of forum. There's nothing special. But I think Discord is more, it's just more interactive in a way, I feel like. Yeah.
I think that's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that experience, because I feel that it is such a good example of a good community, right? And how you were promoted. So your roadmap was set there. You were giving back to the community. It's just a very good example. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I'm also learning that. I think that, again, the community building is one of the skill set for in the Web3 space that I would like to learn in the future too. Like how to... You know how they all say that in technology, you go from 0 to 1. You probably might have heard of that book, right? But then for community building, you have to go from, like, I don't know, 1 to 100, and then 1 to 1,000, right? And then 1 to 10,000, because, that's kind of the skill. So it's very fun.
I think this podcast is a big part of community building itself, right? So I think this is anyway a very phenomenal job that you're doing.
Thank you.
I think you're like 95 to 99% there. If not 100. So that's what I would say.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for the kind words. Going back to Web3 now, where do you think Web3 is heading in the future?
Absolutely. I think the cool thing about Web3 is that every 3 to 4 months, we see a new trend coming in. So last year, we went from blockchain and AI to ZK to then just rollups in general, not ZK, but yeah, optimistic rollups also had their space. And then towards the end of the year, we went back to infra protocols and infra layers becoming the hype. Right now, the hype is deep in decentralized physical infrastructure. So the cool thing about Web3 is that with every hype, it brings new technologies that people can explore and work on. So I feel that Web3 is heading in a direction where it is becoming fit for mass adoption. And, you know, like we discussed, scalability is a problem. You cannot serve 100,000 users on a blockchain right now. But with rollups coming in, with security becoming better, with infra protocols improving day by day, providing lesser and lesser latency, we are heading to a place where we are going to get more users for sure. And on the flip side of this, we've got things like account abstraction, which is becoming better every day. So, you know, I would give a small shout out to say what Bioeconomy is building, what Pimlico is building, or what Alchemy has put out for the world. And these have just made the user onboarding experience so much better than, you know, what it used to be. Because imagine you have to go to a website, connect MetaMask, forget whatever emails you've ever used. MetaMask is the thing. But that's restrictive. Now with, you know, what we use, for example, at Fleek, we use Dynamic for now. And Dynamic is an amazing solution because you can use your emails to connect. So even if you lose access to MetaMask or something happens to the blockchain side of your identity, you still have like a backup with the account abstraction that we have. So yeah, so I would say a better user experience and more security and scalability is where we are headed. And within 3 months, again, we'll see the new trend. Maybe it'll be, you know, back to another consensus mechanism or something else. But yeah, it's very fun to keep an eye on Twitter.
Interesting. Yeah. Thank you for sharing the perspective. And I agree that, yeah, user experience definitely need to be improved upon. I think I would say that all of the guests on my podcast have commented that, yeah, user experience is one of the things that Web3 need to improve upon. Now, just curious about your, since we are still early in 2020, what do you think would be some of the hype or the trend for this year in Web3?
Wow. Hype and trend, let's see. So we can already see a lot of infra level investments happening. So I was tracking very closely what's happening at ETH Denver. And I was able to see that DeFi is going to become very, very big once again, because the bull market is also coming. That means more token launches, that means more exchanges, DEXs, centralized exchanges, whatever. The next segment that I'm very bullish on is DeepIn, decentralized physical infra. I'm building that myself at Fleek, and I can already see that it's having its own impact, where people are now starting to accept Fleek as a solution and moving sort of away from Vercel, because they were able to see the benefits of perpetual storage. And our customers also came back with feedback that, hey, we had these issues with decentralized providers, but with you, we are more happy and you are, you know, better for us in a way. So yeah, I would say DeFi and DeepIn are two very big areas. Security is the next one. I think security is an all-round year thing. It never goes away. It just silently lives there. Audits are happening on C4, and from those audits, you can tell, okay, which company has recently put in a lot of efforts to building a good security layer. ZKSync Era is a company that recently spent more than $500,000 on an audit, and imagine the amount of response they have gotten on that. And that just made the protocol better. So yeah, three things, just to sum it up very quickly, DeFi, DeepIn, security. That's what I would say.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, DeepIn is one sector that I think, yeah, hopefully we'll see more and more in the future. If I remember correctly, I think Helium, right? Helium is one of the original protocol that began with the whole DeepIn. I think they were trying to, what is it, like, give you the broadband, right? Broadband internet or something? Or internet through, the hotspot.
Decentralized network, yeah.
Yeah, decentralized hotspot, yeah. So very interesting what they're doing.
Absolutely.
So hopefully we'll see more.
IPFS grants have helped a lot of people build amazing things there. I remember a lot of companies coming out of the IPFS accelerators and IPFS grants program and everything, where IPFS gave nodes, but now what do with these nodes? So people started giving internet. I saw a company started giving VPNs, decentralized VPNs, and a couple of cool things happening there as well. So yeah,
really?
Definitely.
How does decentralized VPN works?
I have no idea. I saw their white paper and I was like, okay, very cool. When do I see the mainnet? And now I'm just waiting for them to either release the mainnet or tell us how it will be developed. So, yeah, I mean, VPNs. And then even, I mean, you see, if you have the infra layer ready, basically, IoT can also exist with blockchain. So, Internet of Things, but with blockchains. So, again, that is a combination I'm yet to see work. But yeah, that's something that I'm sort of going to research myself whenever I find time. And yeah, that's what I would say.
Interesting. Do you think that we will have more and more things from Web 2 that will become like a similar version in Web 3, but except that it's decentralized? So I think what I've seen a lot, even like in the past few years when I've been Web 3, is that I feel like the word decentralized, there's a lot of things that have been decentralized, right? We have decentralized finance, one of the first one, right? I mean, then we have decentralized social networks now, like with Lens and Farcaster. And then, well, DPIN, right, was like, I don't know, decentralized infrastructure. And then many other things. So you, any particular Web2 areas that you think that will become decentralized? Maybe like VPN?
Yeah.
Anything that you're exciting about?
I think there's like 100 answers to this, because literally everything that can exist centrally can exist decentrally. So I would say that hosting is a very easy service to build.
Yeah.
And that's already become decentralized. Then computational servers. So what Amazon EC2 can provide you today, imagine without having to rely on one EC2 service, but having your entire server distributed across the network. So it's not one computer that's working for you as a server. It's like 100 blockchain nodes that's working for you as a server. That's one thing that I'm really, really bullish on. And I've already seen it get built. So 100%, I think that's a service that can be built and will be ready very soon. But again, I will see. I'm actually looking to read and do more research on things like experimentational stuff around Web3. So as I mentioned, IoT is a big one. Bluetooth is another one. So why is Bluetooth a connection between two computers? Can it be between the entire node series? So that's one thing. And of course, we've talked about mobile hotspots by what Helium was trying to build or what Helium is still trying to build. So definitely, that's one thing that I'd love to see in the future, and I'm very bullish.
Nice. Yeah, same here. Anyway, exciting future is exciting. Which brings me to the show signature question. I want to hear your perspective on this. Is like, how can we as Web3 native builders, right? What can we do to onboard 1 billion people user into Web3?
I have a big answer to this, because I have ranted a lot on Twitter about this. That the second a company comes and says we'd onboard the next billion users, I'm already like, no, you won't. Because I go through, and this is not a dig on any company, this is just a very personal opinion, that before claiming that we will solve problems for 100 or like a billion developers or billion users, first solve problems for the 100 people in your Discord server. At least talk to them, see why they are using or why they are not using your platform. Have good documentation, have good content, at least put your brand ethos out there to tell the world what you are trying to solve. Secondly, get better user experience. You cannot expect me to connect my MetaMask to every account when I have actual money living inside MetaMask. That is how wallets get sniped. That is how wallets get drained. So security is just not there. So therefore, better user experience, better documentation, and better awareness. Now, with communities, with more events, we've seen awareness happen. But awareness is also like a loop. You need to bring in more people every year to make them aware about Web3. And you need to give them proper tools to actually use Web3. I've seen so many events where I just go and ask them a basic question, hey, how many of you have heard about MetaMask? And almost nobody raises their hand. So now I have to leave everything that I decided and teach them what MetaMask is. Imagine how far behind we are in a billion users when people don't even know MetaMask. So it starts off at a very small point where first awareness needs to be built, then education needs to be done, then comes user experience, better infrastructure, everything. And then we need to support people. So whoever uses your protocol, be in touch with them, incentivize them, do something to make them feel like they are a part of the network. How are you building a decentralized network, but not providing incentives to people in your decentralized network? That is a big problem we need to solve to bring the next billion users or bring the first billion users. We've not gotten to the first yet.
Yeah.
So bring the first billion users. But yeah, what's your opinion on this? I think that's what I would say. But what do you feel?
Yeah, I think I basically agree with basically everything you said. And I think with the, I think we have to, and then I just want to add one more thing. So to, I think what you've said is user experience, right? Education, awareness, and security, right? So I mean, I completely agree with all of that. And then I think the last part that I want to add on, which is, this opinion, this is also opinion of mine, but also from some other guests on my podcast also, is that I think Web3 has a reputational problem in the sense that we have way too many scams and hacks and bad news, right, in our industry. And I think it's not really helping to, you know, when people hear about like, oh, another breach has got hacked and, you know, maybe $70 million just got drained out of the thing. When people hear numbers like that, right, they're like, oh, why should I go to Web3? Yeah. So I think that's probably going to hold a lot of people back. So until we, I don't really have an answer for that, obviously. That's why I like to ask my guests for their opinion. But yeah, I think the reputational problem, I feel like it has to be the collective effort from everyone in the industry, right? So yeah, I think it's also come with the security. As security improve and user experience become better, and yeah, hopefully things that, so we'll have fewer hacks and maybe the amount will be less, things will become more secure. Yeah, but I don't think we can expect people to be fully educated though about like how to use something in Web3 for now, for the time being, because it's still very difficult, right? Like a lot of the process, even like just using MetaMask to buy something, how to on-ramp certain thing, where to buy certain token, how to make sure that it's not a scam token before you buy it. Yeah. If you go on decentralized exchange, right? And then even if you put on centralized exchange, actually, so my last episode with one of my guests, Balao Khan, I'm going to leave a link up here, actually. He talked about, you know, some of the problem with centralized exchange. One of it was like, what if the centralized exchange go bankrupt and then they you know, hold custody of your money, then you lose your money, right? It's also, yeah, so you cannot really be 100% safe, right, everywhere. But, so hopefully.
Definitely.
Yeah, so I don't really have the answer for that, but anyway. But what is your favorite tools that you go to on a daily basis, right, for your work and maybe in Web3 also? What are some of your tools that you use?
For me, it sort of varies a lot. So I'm a big wallet enthusiast. I want to try out different wallets, see what they are doing, how are they bringing better experience for me, et cetera, et cetera. One shout out I'd love to give here is Rabi Wallet, because they have a good layer of security where before every transaction I need to like do a two-factor kind of a thing to actually make that transaction go forward. So to an extent, it prevents wallet sniping, wallet hacking, stuff like that. Whenever I build products, I love Hardhat, because for local Ethereum development, Hardhat brings me the ease of using JavaScript with Solidity. So yeah, that's one tool that I really love and support and use. Experimentations around dApps, MetaMask, obviously. Not going to waste my time setting up Rabi for development purposes. MetaMask, just go through it. ThirdWeb is one tool that I've used tremendously whenever I've built anything around NFTs, because they provide a very good layer where you can mint your NFT, put it on IPFS, get the hash, get everything you need, and then make a marketplace sort of a framework out of it. So I've built educational websites as well, where once you finish a course, you get an NFT. And that entire NFT infra was built using ThirdWeb. So definitely a big shout out and a big helper tool as well. Whenever I'm trying to build something, I find myself that whenever I Google, I find ThirdWeb in the content that is about that. So definitely helpful. I use a couple of other tools like Notion or whatever management tools to make sure that all my documentation is in one place. And that's majorly it. All communications on Discord, communities on sort of Twitter and Discord, and management on Notion, stuff like that. And for all kinds of dev purposes, you know, again, VS Code. Nothing beats VS Code. I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the tools I use. What about you?
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, for sure. GitHub and GitHub Copilot too. Just add in there. Yeah, GitHub Copilot for VS Code. I think it helped me a lot. But you don't want to be fully. And I think now we live in the age of AI. So OpenAI, ChatGPT for sure. I feel like whoever is not using AI at this point is probably going to be lagging behind. Right? I think we're in the age of you either have to either use AI that we currently have, or if you don't use it, you will be lagging behind, right? It's like basically, I feel like we'll amplify your productivity and amplify your thinking power also. So if you just don't use it, I don't see any reason why people should not use it. I mean, they even have like a free version, right? You don't even need to pay for it. Just use a free version for now, and you can get enough of the value out of there already. So those are, I would say my favorite.
AI is how we met. We were discussing
The project we were building on AI. Yeah, but of course, there's some like drawbacks to AI, the large language model as we know it, as well. Yeah. It's not. I don't know if the AI community is going to be able to solve some of the inherent problem in that or not. But I'm excited where the AI is heading, and also for the decentralized AI as well too. That's another part that's also very exciting.
Yeah,
I'm also following that space quite closely for this year to see where it's. Helping.
What's happening in that space? Yeah. Could you walk me up to speed? Anything that you saw or, built or anything?
No, to be honest, I haven't seen any. That's one thing I would love to see. If you know any guests who's working in AI or researcher, whether Web 2 or Web 3, I would love to actually bring them onto my podcast also.
Absolutely,
I've only read some documents, seen some website from a few protocols around AI. I have not actually seen the actual demonstration. And for me, when I work in tech, I'm a big believer in, seeing the code, seeing the how it actually works under the hood, things like that, right? Because whatever you put on the site, right, it could say one thing, but like it might, if it's not the right thing in reality, then it's not ready for adoption yet. One of the things that I've been reading a lot about is like just decentralized AI in the sense that how can you decentralize some components of the machine learning process, right? So there's usually a couple of different processes, right? You have the data process, well, you have to do data cleaning, the data inference, and then the model, in the inference part. I think that's one of the part where they're probably trying to decentralize. To be honest, I don't have a full grasp of how they plan to decentralize that, because up until now, all the AI models that I have built have always been centralized in the sense that I need to have the data in whether in my laptop or on some drive on the cloud somewhere, right, that I can access to. And then I need enough like computing power. You need a lot of computing power.
A lot of computing,
right?
Yeah.
Whether it's CPU or GPU, but most likely GPU. If you're training with neural network, you need GPU for sure, period.
Yeah.
So you need that computing power centralized in a way, right? So I don't know how it would work on the decentralized AI.
Exactly.
And then for the inference part also. Yeah. So that's also a big question mark for me. And there's a lot of hype, I would say, going on right now in Web 3 about the decentralized AI. But I'm somewhat a little bit still on the skeptical side. I'm a believer, but I'm still on the skeptical side until I can see some actual product or some demos that are actually working. Or maybe
100%,
maybe I have to read some more research paper in like very convoluted mathematics, like PhD level, which I don't think I can fathom. It'll take me a few years of going back to school maybe to understand a lot of those like very extremely convoluted mathematics. But
yeah,
like I said, I remain hopeful though in how it
Absolutely.
Will come out in the future. Yeah. So anyway, just two more questions here from my side. One is that seeing you're like a very excellent engineer, I would like to ask, like, do you have any advice for developers or maybe people in general who want to break into Web3?
100%. I think that for developers who have been interested in Web3 for a long time, or they just want to get into Web3 now, I think the most fundamental thing I can tell you is please have your Web2 basics sorted. If your Web2 basics are not done yet, it is going to be very, very difficult for you to scale up and to actually understand and build on top of your knowledge. Every Web3 platform will use fundamentals from Web2. It would need you to have grasp of React.js. It would need you to have grasp of how a server will work, or what distributed computing is, or what DevOps is. So if that knowledge is just not available to you and you have not spent time learning all of that, you cannot become a good Web3 engineer. Because at the end of the day, we are building solutions and we're building softwares on top of blockchains. So how to build a software is something you need to know before getting and putting that software on a blockchain. Because then your deployment layers will change. You need to do some other type of architectures or not. You can only decide that if you know Web2. So make a basic React app. make a basic server, connect the two, get the data flowing, understand how databases work in general. I feel that, you know, relational, non-relational, that is up to you. SQL, MongoDB, they both perform very nicely. Just build that information for you first. Once that is done, then move on to Web3, because at least you have a very good foundation to work on, and you will go very quickly from point A to point B. If you're somebody who has just started writing HTML, and now you say, okay, I'll make a DApp, it will take you 6 months. But if you make an app before a DApp, it will take you less than 2 months. And then your major focus is not how to make a website, it is how to write Solidity, or how to connect Solidity to React, stuff like that. So first advice, build Web2 foundations, very, very important. Second advice, never refrain from learning, because Web3 changes a lot. If you say, okay, now I know how to write Solidity, I will not learn anything again. You will be outdated in 3 months. The job market will just move so much ahead of you, you will not be able to catch up. So always be on the lookout for good articles and things you can read. And whatever you learn, share them online. Tell the world that, hey, I learned something. It will get you hiring managers, founders, good communities, good engineers around you. It is just the most beneficial to share things with the people around you and build a community around you. That's what I would say is my piece of advice for any developer who's interested or listening.
Excellent advice, actually. I think that makes sense, yeah. Because I think at the end of the day, a lot of the dApps that we use in Web3, we still have to use some Web2 technology, right? Obviously, like for the front end, for example.
Exactly.
Some Web3 product also still use like a centralized database, you know? Yeah, so there's still a lot of Web2 components being used there, right? Yeah, so exactly. We cannot really escape away from that. Yeah,
I mean, just to add on, you know, see React or Node.js or all, they are not centralized. They are not decentralized. They are just a tool, right?
Yeah,
you can use it in whatever way you like. So learn the tooling first, then move to the ideology that you want to follow. So yeah, that's basically it. Just wanted to.
Yeah, totally makes sense. And then I feel like with programming language and the tools, once you have learned. And master, by master, I mean like have a really good command and grasp of the language, of one or two languages, and learning a new language would become so much easier, right? Yeah, I think exactly. It's similar to human language in a way. After you've learned your second language, right, you know the grammar of that language, and you can learn the third and fourth language, because now you understand like how human language works versus someone who is monolingual, right? I'm sure you were well aware of that too.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely, yes.
Awesome. And yeah, final question. Where can people follow you? Please feel free to share any social media handles and username, website.
Absolutely, here. Absolutely. So yeah, one of the best ways to reach out to me, I'm always active on, is called Twitter. I think my Twitter is somewhere here. This is me, Kanish Khurana. Kanish Khurana _ on all sorts of platforms. This is sort of my, like, stable handle everywhere. Okay. So you can definitely find me on Twitter. That's the best way to reach out. And you know, if you're on LinkedIn, just type Kanish Khurana, you'll see somebody wearing a red top and whatever t-shirt or whatever. And yeah, that's basically me. So Twitter and LinkedIn are the best places to find me.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll make sure to put your social account information in the show notes so that people can follow you, and maybe put your website out there also too. You can check out your website, maybe sign up for the alpha, right? Alpha testnet right now.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, once again, Hanish, it's been awesome talking to you today. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you for being on the show.
It was a phenomenal experience for me. I had so much fun talking to you, and I just hope to, you know, be in touch, meet you very, very soon in some, you know, ETH events or conferences, and keep this going. Thank you so much for having me there.
Yeah, thank you again for having here. I'm sure we see each other in this small Web3 world. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Cheers. Have a good one. And we're back to my studio. What do you guys think about this episode with Kanish Khurana? Every time I met Kanish, I'm always amazed by his enthusiasm and the passion he has for coding and Web3. For the next episode, we'll be talking to Abhijit Sinha, who is the CEO and founder of Decimo, and they are building a decentralized, trustless data marketplace. It's an interesting episode about Web3 that you don't want to miss. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a like and subscribe, because it would mean a lot to me. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.